and I'm going to paraphrase, but he goes, you got to understand, guy, these are salt of the earth people. These are farmers. These are simple folk.
These are the common clay of the New West. You know, morons. Yeah, what's interesting is this is the second time we see the Big Band aesthetic when it comes to Bart. The first time is when he sings, I Get a Kick Out of You.
Yes, yeah. And I love it.
Yeah. Oh, this was my note. Take me down to the Old Town Road. Ah, sorry. It was bad.
Oh, man. Okay, so it's the welcome... Okay, so like the welcoming committee is like there's a bandstand and they've got music playing and all these white people from town are like milling around and old scrawny Long John's is on top of the building with a periscope, right? And he's like, the sheriff is coming, right? And they're like, oh, right. And he looks and he gets, and the guy's like.
Well, the band's playing and you hear the bell, the town bell ringing.
Well, what happens is they say, okay, start up the band, get the church bell ringing, and I'm going to practice my speech. And as Bart gets closer, dude is looking through his periscope and he goes, the sheriff, he's in.
Yeah, and then as he's about to say the N-word, the bell rings to kind of block it.
Well, yes, the sheriff is near.
Yeah, I know. He's like, what did he say? He said the sheriff is near.
No, I said that the sheriff isn't.
Ding. Which, honestly, I would have loved if they did a little bit more creative.
If they had done it the whole fudging time.
Yeah, except for like maybe towards the very end between Bart and Lamar. Like, if you only hear it one time and it's from this guy who's in a position of power.
Yeah, just before he's taken down.
Mm-hmm. I think that would have made for a much more enjoyable movie.
I really like it to see how cleverly, like, you know, the scenes where somebody's naked and they, like, cover it up by, like, moving a fan or a vase or, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like the Austin Powers
stuff.
Which is one of my favorite parts of the Austin Powers films. If they had done that verbally, acoustic, if they'd done that sound-wise, if they'd foleyed out all of the naughty words, I would have liked that a lot. Mm-hmm.
Right. Or maybe even gave you a little bit like you think they're going to say it, but then they don't.
Because they do it in this scene and it works so well.
Yeah. And so when Bart gets closer, you see there's a guy who's going to be giving the speech and he's holding up this laurel and everything. And he's not looking up. He's just looking down at the paper. And Bart gets closer and then the band just stops. And the guy says his speech, we welcome you to our town with a smile and this
firm handshake and this branch of laurel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
and Bart, he knows, he understands that this is a tense moment. And so he gets off that horse, but he steps up to that podium with pride.
I would like to note, we said firm handshake and a branch of laurel, but it's a hearty handshake and a branch of laurel. It's a laurel and a hearty. Don't give me those eyes with your mouth, you pouty McPowderson.
Thank you for pointing that out, Jen, because I completely ignored it. I completely didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
So he goes up to the podium and he's like, let me whip this out. And all of the women are like, ah.
Yeah. And he pulls out his speech.
It's a legal written document by the attorney general. Saying that he is now the sheriff.
Yes. And then everyone gets gun happy. Everyone's got a gun. And then all point it to him.
Yeah.
And then what does he do?
He pulls out his gun and points it to himself.
And then he starts talking like he's someone else. He's just like, oh, anyone moves, then this N-word gets it. Is that what he says?
I think so. He's essentially holding himself hostage because if he doesn't, then he's definitely going to get shot by white people.
Oh, if anybody moves their gun, if anybody fires their gun, this man's going to get it.
Yeah, and he pretty much, like, holds himself hostage, and he even starts talking in, like, this caricature of a black person, you know, like, oh, I don't want to.
Yeah, but yeah. We can't imitate it. But then he also does, like, a woman's voice. He's like, oh, no, what are you going to do?
No, one of the women actually says, someone help that poor man. And then
yeah,
one
that
of
was
the
men. School marm. She says it.
Yeah, and then another guy is like, that's an easy way for him to get shot. What's interesting about this moment is He gets himself safely inside and
the sheriff's office,
and he closes the door, and then he looks right at the camera and he's like, "Oh, baby, you are so smart and they are so dumb." But what I think is interesting about this scene, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seems to me that white people are very quick to care about black people when you're talking about black on black crime. But when it's white on black crime, they are real quick to ignore that. And again, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like when people are like, "Oh yeah, you know what's wrong with the black community even today?" It's it's just all the black on black crime. It's proximity crime.
It's not
because of systematic racism or the fact that people are getting shot by the police. You know, the majority of what white on black crime is.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, bring it back
down.
You're at a 5.5. We're going to bring it back down. This is the only acceptable straight to camera in the entire film.
Yeah.
I had a question. School marm, is that Harriet Johnson? Is that her character's
name?
She's
got to be because she's on the council and it's all the Johnsons.
Right.
All right. That's Carol Arthur. She was the wife of Dom DeLuise at the time.
Yeah.
This is the moment when I noticed there were so many Johnsons on the council. Not the first time. Oh, they're having a council meeting to write a letter to the governor and being like, what?
Yeah. And she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. The school marm isn't a public speaker." I thought that was funny. But
yes,
then.
But she writes this telegram and it ends with calling him an asshole.
Right.
The governor an asshole, right?
Right. But the telegram is pretty much their protest of a black sheriff.
Uh-huh.
And they say,
our God-fearing white
citizens.
Yeah, Can we leave these guys?
Yeah. Can we go to Gene Wilder and the drunk tank?
Yes.
Yes.
How many drunk tanks have we had on this podcast? Two. And the drunk in number two is Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Who has fallen off the bunk and is hanging upside down by his holster.
Yeah.
And like, the greatest part about it is that Bart this entire time is just amused.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to being like, okay, we've all known somebody. But as opposed to being disgusted or annoyed or like, bothered, he's all like amused the entire time, and it's endearing because it shows his sweet side. He's obviously, if you mean no harm to me, I mean no harm to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just like this drunk guy who's like in a pickle, who's pickled in a pickle,
right? But he's also interacting with Gene Wilder's character, whose name is Jim.
Uh-huh.
Most people call him Jim.
which is funny because most people call me
Tim. Yes.
He's like, "Oh gosh, I didn't write it down."
I know, and it was so clever. It was like a way for him. It was like, "Oh, are you all right?" And he's like, "I don't know.
Are you black?
And he was like, "Yep, I'm black." He's like,
"Then yep, I'm all right."
Yeah. And he's hanging upside down.
Yeah.
And he's not worried about he obviously isn't worried by the this man simply because of the color of his skin.
No, and what's interesting is that Bart meets him right there. He's like, "Well, now you gotta sober up. What do you wanna do?" And Jim leans back and he's just like, "Whiskey? Chess? We could screw." And then Bart's like, "Whiskey and chess it is then."
Yeah.
But okay, I think that Jim is coded as a gay character. How do you feel about that? He offers to bang him, is not interested in any women later on except for going to a fabulous show, and then there's a bunch of gay stuff later.
Well, there is the moment with Madeline Kahn's character.
What did he do with Madeline?
Remember, she asked him to go up to...
I'm talking about Jim.
Oh, Jim?
Yeah, Jim.
Oh, I thought
Jim's gay.
Oh, okay.
Jim is super gay.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'm so down.
Mm-hmm.
And he does act a little effeminate. It's the funny thing is that he's not over the top. In the same way that Bart isn't a caricature of a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go so far as to say, in the same way that Ben in Night of the Living Dead isn't a caricature of a black man.
Right.
And that's not to say that he's doing whoosh, whoosh, applauders, that's our air quotes noise. He's not whoosh, whoosh, acting white. I wouldn't say that.
He's acting like a human being.
He's acting like he's going to act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is refreshing. And in that same way, Gene Wilder, you know, I see a couple things that kind of allude to this character being gay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no big deal because that's not the joke right now. Except for the whole, "Do you want to screw? Okay, I guess we'll play chess."
Right.
Like it's a casual joke. It's not gross, you know?
See, and I didn't read it. I mean, when I watched it, I didn't think that he said he wanted to specifically screw, like talking to Bart, like, "You want to screw?" I was more like, "I want to drink whiskey, play chess, or screw." And it was just sort of like a random thing.
Oh, to like any, like, yeah. It could be a lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, but I would rather him be gay.
Right.
So if I could decide.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so after this, we go in.
Back.
Yeah, we get into backstory. Part? Yeah, we find out that Jim used to be what was called the Waco Kid, the fastest guns in the West. And he was like, fastest guns in the world.
Yes. Bart is asking him why he's a drinker. And it's because he kept getting continually challenged.
Right. And then he has this like kid come up behind him.
A 6-year-old.
Yeah. And he says,
when I saw that 6-year-old, I just threw my guns down, turned around right. and walked away.
And then he shot me in the ass.
Bart's like, here, you need this. And he hands him the whiskey bottle. He's like, why don't you shoot anymore otherwise or something like that. And Jim holds out his hand and it's flat. And he goes, oh, steady as a rock. And then he holds up his other hand that's wiggle-waggling yeah, all over
like,
the place.
He's like, yeah, too bad I shoot with this one. And it's just like, it's having a lot of, it's like, it's shaking a lot.
And then for some reason, they come up with this test.
Bart isn't, he's like, no, you're pulling my chain. I don't think that you're actually the Waco Kid.
Yes. And so he says, place the king from the chess set in front of you. Place your hands on either side, right?
Right.
And when I say go, clap them together, your hands, over the king.
Right. And try and get it. And
before I can.
Yeah. And so, like, and this is some interesting editing that they do. So the way that it goes is Bart has his hands open towards each other with the king in between. And then you just see him clap his hands over it and then move it towards him. And he probably has to like open it a little bit, but you can't see if his hands do open, because then he brings his hands out and then there's no king there. So it has to be like a magician type move or something.
You think it was a full on practical effect?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, if it wasn't, then they got that editing down great.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, because Gene Wilder doesn't move at all.
That's the great part mm-hmm. about is that he doesn't. And then he goes, oh, were you looking for this? Reaches into his empty holster.
Yeah.
And he pulls out the king and Bart is like, what?
Yeah, which, I mean, like, if you're going to do movie magic, practical effects like that are pretty great.
So what's your story, Bart? Well, it all goes back to the wagon train.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we weren't allowed to be a part of it. So they were like far back from the wagon train.
The Sioux Nation, which...
Yeah, yeah they circle the wagons. But again, because they're separate, they had to make their own. And so you see their wagon circling around itself.
Yeah. So I assume some of you plotters are young. But like if a wagon train was to come under attack, you would form a circle and then the vulnerable people would be on the inside and then you'd be fighting mm-hmm. other people on the outside, and this happens to be depicted with poorly portrayed indigenous people mm-hmm. and definitely more tormented persons than these poor wagoneers.
Yeah.
The joke is that like the one black family with them didn't have anybody to circle up with, so they just went in a circle
right.
by themselves. And then they get confronted by whom we assume is the chief, because he's wearing a headdress, and it's Mel Brooks in appropriating indigenous person gear.
Yeah, it's like, ugh.
It hurt. And also, like, I couldn't look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what the joke is.
I don't think there is a joke. I think he's just like, yeah, you can go. He speaks Yiddish.
Okay.
And then he tells them they can move on. And then he makes the point that these people are darker than him.
Yes.
Which,
Yeah. Is that the whole thing?
That's the whole joke. Ah.
Mel Brooks's secondary role is the Jewish Indian chief. And it was another jab at classic Hollywood Westerns. In the iconic Western, The Searchers, Chief Scar is played by Henry Brandon, who was a German-born Jew.
Yes, I just watched a TikTok where they talked about how the guy who was the crying Indian in the litter commercial was an Italian guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to say one last thing about this. Kudos to Mel Brooks for being the one who's appropriating it. And he's the director, because he's like, I'm not going to put someone else into it.
Yeah, he's going to catch
do it.
All the noise.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and take the flack for this one. So.
Okay. So, hey, guess what?
Beans, a musical fruit.
The more you eat,
the more you toot.
The more you toot, the better you feel.
I don't know how it ends.
So let's eat beans for every meal.
Okay.
And you could also say beans are good for your heart.
Okay.
The more you eat, the more you fart.
The
more you fart, the better you feel. So let's eat beans for every meal. So we pan across a barbed wire fence, and to one of the posts is nailed a sign that says, for official appointments only or something.
Yeah, knock on the fence.
Yeah, knock on the barbed wire for inquiries or something. It's real funny. And we roll over to all of these people eating what looks totally like not the baked beans I would make on the trail. Mm-hmm. It looks like Bush's baked beans, like these pale beans, and they're just eating mouthfuls and mouthfuls across, like, what, 2 dozen people?
Mm-hmm.
And as they start eating it,
they start farting.
They start lifting their legs.
Yeah, one guy, like, stands up to get a better angle. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And then the boss guy comes out of the, you know, our sub-boss guy, whose mm-hmm. name I should probably look up. He comes out, and he's just like, hooey! And he starts flapping his hat, and then everybody's flapping their
yeah. Is it Mongo?
No. This is the scene with Mongo, but he's not showing up
yeah,
in it yet.
They're like, there's a sheriff in town. Which one of you wants to go kill him? Everybody volunteers. And then he's like, you know who I'm going to send Mongo.
Right.
So I have a couple of things on this particular flatulence scene. It is one of the scenes that Mel Brooks had told people that he would cut out, except he only ended up cutting out one scene, and that scene hasn't happened yet, so I won't mention what it is.
So we go over to Mongo, who is chained by his neck.
Yeah, and as soon as the guy in charge comes over, he's like trying to bite at him, and he's like, and he beats Mongo until he calms down. He's like, I'm your boss, here, smell me. He's a dog.
Yeah.
Like a dog that you don't take care of and doesn't recognize you by sight or like by smell, because dogs have incredible senses of smells.
And he's like, you're gonna go kill the sheriff. And he's like, oh, yeah. And then he like gives him a green cigar and he lights it in the fire, setting his hat on fire. It's a great little smoke gag, mm-hmm. which is fantastic.
The character Mongo was originated from Richard Pryor's mind. He came up with that character.
Yeah. I'm glad that because I was having trouble with the name Mongo. But on our scale of 0 to 10, it was only registering about a 1.5 because it was a white guy. Yeah. I was like, okay, we're just gonna leave that one there. Can I say in the sheriff? Okay, stupid thing. Watching somebody roll a cigarette by hand and like lick the seam and then like wet the paper and like then light the cigarette. As a person who really hates other people's fluids, it is super sexy. Yeah.
What's
wrong with my brain? Bart's like rolling a cigarette on some weirdly yellow paper, mm-hmm. and I'm like, and then he shares that cigarette with Jim,
who's like shaving his face, and he looks a lot, you know, like he's sobering up a little bit.
Yes. It's weird. The running gag is every time Jim takes a puff of the cigarette, he like goes up a really high octave.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is he rolling in there?
I think it's supposed to be weed.
That's pretty fun and super not illegal then. Mm-hmm. So like, have at it. Smoke it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so they're having this conversation back and forth where Jim's like, they're not really going to accept you, right? And he's like, no. Or Bart says, no, if I just establish myself, they'll have to accept me. And so he goes out and he's looking like a good sheriff, and he comes across the first lady he sees, and it's the old lady who was getting beat up earlier. And he says, oh, good morning, ma'am. Isn't it a lovely morning? And she says, up yours, racial slur.
Yeah. And then he's back in the office. And
Oh,
Gene Wilder's comfort speech right now.
Oh, and Bart is so affected by this.
He's just kind of staring off in the distance. And so Jim comes up behind him, puts his hands on his shoulder, and he goes, and I'm going to paraphrase, but he goes, you got to understand, guy, these are salt of the earth people. These are farmers. These are simple folk.
These are the common clay of the New West. Morons. And as soon as he says morons, you see Cleveland Little break up.
He broke character. He 100% had to have been breaking character.
That had to have been improvised by Gene Wilder.
Or he hadn't had it delivered in his ear yet.
Right.
Like, it was really funny, but he didn't. You know, until you hear it.
Yeah. You know what I really like about the scene? Bart goes to the one person who accepted him at face value, like right at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't go to, and nobody else is accepting him, but he's just like, I am affected by the fact that this person just, you know, insulted me in an egregious manner.
Uh-huh.
And I am going to go back to the one person who I feel accepts me.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great moment. Enter Mongo.
He rides in on a bull, and so I don't get it, but like on the bull's butt, one side says yes and one side says no. What does that mean?
I don't know,
but I do have a Mongo specific Sean
Mongo,
fact for this
Mongo
scene. When Mongo rides into town, one Mexican says, Mongo Santa Maria, and Mongo Santa Maria was a famous Cuban musician.
Mongo is a big burly guy and everybody's kind of scared of him. He goes, we hear a couple of Johnsons talking about a vaccine in France by Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, it's going to solve anthrax. And I was like, oh, 1974. Yeah. What are you doing to me?
Yeah.
Talking vaccine. They cut back to him after cutting, I'm sure, to the Mexican guy and is like, just think about it. Foot and mouth disease will be a thing of the past.
And he's like, we can't talk about that right now. Mongo's coming into the bar or the saloon or something.
Yeah, the guy's so interested Mongo. In not talking about vaccines.
Yeah, he's like, Mongo. And Mongo comes through and he rips the doors off.
Yeah, and he looks at him like, ooh.
Yeah.
Didn't know I had that in me.
Yeah.
He knew he had it in him.
But then we cut to the sheriff's office and someone comes in and
it's like he got the stage direction wrong, which I think is a super funny gag for those of you who like theater at all.
Right.
He walks to the desk and he's just like, Sheriff, you got to do something about Mongo. And then he like looks at the desk and there's nobody there. And he turns around and he walks over to Bart and he goes, Sheriff, you've got to do something about Mongo.
Or he says, please help us. And then Bart's like, oh, now it's please. When earlier today you could. Wouldn't give me the time of day.
Right. So he goes to put on his, he's going to help. He has to. He's our hero. Mm-hmm. He goes to put on his gun and Jim goes, he says, exactly. If you shoot him, you're just going to make him mad.
Yeah. So Bart looks at his guns. And then the next thing that we see is Mongo pressing a bunch of people up against the wall. And who walks in but...
It's Bart, but he's in like a delivery uniform. Did you notice that the literal Looney Tunes theme is playing? It's like dun 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 dun
Candygram.
And Bart like takes the box and so he drops the desk that he's holding or the table, I assume.
Right. He's dressed up as a candygram and he keeps saying, It's a candygram. Candygram for Mongo. And Mongo leaves him alone.
Yeah, he opens the box and there's a black powder like explosion. Black smoke anyway.
Yeah.
And he...
he doesn't open it until after Bart's left.
Yes. And the way he leaves is like very yuckity yuckity yuckity.
Yeah. It's a Bugs Bunny gag.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. And then the box explodes and everything. Also, there was a... wasn't there a moment like right after this where they're in the sheriff's office and Bart says, it was really hard. I had to invent the candygram.
I don't know if that happens. That might happen next. I don't know. But
it's very throwbacky to my mind. It's like I am your singing telegram. Bang.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
From Clue.
If you'd like that, please applaud or listen to our Clue episode.
Right.
But we do go to Lamar's bathing area.
Yeah.
Don't you love to see? This is the second time in this film we've watched a white guy bathing. But like it's a guy taking a bath or a shower. And I definitely need to see that for some reason.
OK, so like when you're talking about Jim being coded gay, like I definitely get a lot of like homosexual vibes between Lamar and the head henchman.
Well, because he touches his dick in this scene.
Well, not just that. Like the two seem to care. Like when Lamar like grabs him by the head in that very first scene we see them together and he's like, oh, my head. He's like, oh, you know, they're comforting each other. They're being, you know, caring towards each other, almost like they're a couple.
That was another coded thing for quite a few years where if it was a gay couple, one was incredibly intelligent and the other one was a goon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
So,
I don't know. But my favorite part of this scene is they're relating. He's a guy whose name I should know.
Right.
Is relating to Lamar what's going on. So then Lamar waxes poetic again. Like I should have written down, but like that doesn't matter because the golden line in this scene isn't something because he's like, oh, my tumultuous brain is undulating. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. He's like, goon. God, there's got to be a better word. But guy is like, you use your tongue prettier than a $20 sex worker.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to. I'll hold back my own slurs. And not my slurs. This is a slur in the script. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you don't know, applauders, we refer to anyone who's a prostitute or a whore in a dated movie. We're going to use the word sex worker because
That's what they are.
And if they die, they are no less people.
Right.
And that's cool.
But that line gives Lamar an idea. And he's like, I got an idea. But he doesn't tell what it is. And he's like, I need my froggy.
Yes. And the grossest. Okay. So he gets a little rubber frog that, of course, wouldn't exist then. Mm-hmm. And he's the fight to find it, though. He's like, my frog. Super, super angry about it all of a sudden. My frog. Give me my froggy. My froggy.
Yeah.
And so dude starts freaking out because he's freaking out. Searches all over for it. Reaches in the water. Grabs the guy's dong.
Yeah. And he's like,
that's not Mr. Froggy.
Yeah.
My froggy or whatever. And then when he finally does find and hand his boss the frog, he's like, oh, did you miss me, my froggy? Daddy missed you. And I was like, Yeah.
So how many plans have they had to pretty much get the town to leave the city limits? Like, the first one was to go ahead and attack the town.
Uh-huh.
And then the second one was to bring in Bart. But nobody's leaving. Nope. So they have to start getting rid of Bart. So I would think that that's they still think that getting rid of the sheriff is going to be the best thing to get the people out of the town. So the third plan is to get Mongo. And now we're coming up on like the fourth plan.
Yeah.
Because we're introduced to Madeline Kahn's character, and she is a burlesque dancer who also moonlights as a heartbreaker for Lamar.
And he's like super into her, but she is not into him.
Right.
He wants to touch her like all the time, and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I labeled this grab at Bart as the blonde Kahn.
I've got a Sean fact for you. Madeline Kahn started working on the movie the day after being fired from the role of Agnes Gooch in MAME in 1974. When interviewing Lucille Ball, she said that she believed that Kahn got herself fired by deliberately acting poorly so that she could take the role of Lily von Stoop in this film but still get paid for the Gooch role in MAME, which by her contract wouldn't have happened if she'd merely quit.
Good on her.
Yeah.
Make your money, sister. Mm-hmm. Get it.
So the whole shtick with Stoop is that...
Oh, yeah. Her character's named Lily von Stoop.
Yeah. And so she, like, she moonlights as someone who, like, breaks... It, the way that it's worded is that I need you to break the heart. I need you to love him and leave the new sheriff and leave him heartbroken and everything. And she's just like, okay. But she's a burlesque dancer. And she's coming into the saloon. She's putting on the show.
Yeah, I think we go from him asking her to do it to Jim and Bart deciding that they're going to go to the show. It's Jim's idea. He's like, there's a show in town and I don't want to miss out.
Oh, I think I missed that part because it was the old lady who, you know, used the slur earlier. She went ahead and thanked him by giving him a pie.
Yes, my note says racist apple pie lady. Okay, yeah.
And so she gives him the pie.
She knocks on the window.
Yeah, and he lifts it up. She's like, oh, thank you so much. And I'm so sorry for how I treated you earlier today. And he's like, oh, that's so nice. And he goes and carries the pie away.
He smells it. And then
she comes back.
Yeah, he hands off the pie to Jim, opens up the blinds again. And she's like, but you're not going to tell anybody that I said that you're nice or whatever. You're not going to tell them I said thanks or made you a pie or whatever.
And that's the racism.
Yeah. But and then Jim says something really funny. He's just like, hey, great. You'll be able to say hello to a man in the light of day in the next 10 years or something.
Yeah. They'll start accepting you in public in 25 years.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And then he's like, well, we should go and see this this burlesque show.
So we enter into the saloon where Lily von Stoop is singing Mel Brooks' original work entitled
I'm Tired.
And I've got some Sean facts for you on this one. I'm Tired is an homage to and parody of Marlene Dietrich's singing of Cole Porter's song, I'm the Laziest Gal in Town, in Alfred Hitchcock's 1950 film Stage Fright, as well as Falling in Love Again, Can't Help It, from The Blue Angel. Also, I have a little audition thing from Madeline Kahn that I forgot to mention earlier. Mel Brooks asked to see her legs during an audition. She objected. And she said, so it's that kind of audition? And Brooks recalled, I explained that I was a happily married man and that I needed someone who could straddle a chair with her legs like Marlene Dietrich in Destry Rides Again. So she lifted her skirt and said, no touching. And that's it.
Good for her.
That's fantastic. And she has the gams for it.
Mm-hmm. He even calls her Lily the legs.
Yes. Lamar does when he beats her. Yeah. So I don't know if it's supposed to be terrible. But this song is terrible.
Yeah.
It's the lyrics are great. Mm-hmm. The production of it is fine.
Yeah.
Even the German soldiers who come and march around,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. But like the music itself, it feels like if you smush paste between your fingers and it's sticky but not wet and it's not quite dry yet. It's just aesthetic kinesthetic description enough for you.
Yeah.
It's fine. She's not too off key.
Right.
But the pacing is really slow.
Right. And I don't know if that was, I think it was intentional.
It feels intentional because,
right.
I mean, you see people in much earlier films like Peggy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Peggy Lee. She was the crooner I like. Mae West, whom I love. In things like I'm No Angel. Like she works a room. She'll entertain.
Mm-hmm.
She's supposed to be this glamorous, oftentimes out west sort of person who, you know, and those are much more dynamic, I feel like, to me, scenes. And so when she's just like, I'm like, I don't feel seduced by this. I don't know why the room of men is going crazy. Are they this deprived between, well, they never see secretary, right?
Right.
And they never, and I guess school marm is like not pulling it for them. And grandma over there with her racist pies, you know, like unpleasant, but like,
Right. It feels like the joke is she's really tired of being with all of these men. She's tired of being admired, and she just wants something new, something different, I guess.
She says they're always coming and going, or going and coming, and always too soon.
Yeah.
It's gross. Yeah. But it's funny. That's like the funniest line, though.
Yeah.
So like, whatever. Yeah. I wish it had been more.
Agreed. Agreed. At the end of this song, she gets carried away by her German soldiers. And
yeah, with a curtain call. And yeah, you see her break character at the end of the last curtain call, by the way. Mm-hmm. She's like, ah, as they drag her off stage. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
If you see like a little glimmer of a character break, mm-hmm, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And Bart gets a letter saying, I would like to see you in, sorry, that was French, not
my
German.
My dressing womb.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of her whole thing is that she has like too many W's. She's the Bavarian whatever.
Yeah.
She's German.
Yeah.
Right? And she's just the W's. And she does a terrible accent. It's just the worst.
Sorry. I'm thinking of someone else, not Madeleine Kahn. She was the Ghost of Christmas Present in Scrooge. Carolyn Kane, yeah. She has that lisp that she has to deal with.
Yeah, but it's like her actual speaking voice. It's not right. Like, it's not like she's trying to do a German accent and it all comes out
sounding like Barbara Walters.
Or like the priest from Princess Bride, where it's like, yeah, marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today.
Yeah.
Boning. Boning the
this blessed arrangement.
Brought anyways to us by Mr. Womar.
So she's in her room, and Bart comes into her room, and she's still wearing her get up from stage, and he brings her a red rose. And
having dismissed Lamar's mm-hmm bouquet earlier as pedestrian or generic, yeah, I think she says, she's like, a red rose, how romantic.
Yeah.
She's like, let me slip into something more comfortable. She sits him on the couch and goes behind a screen. And instead of being in like this black negligee with fishnets and all that, she comes out in like what I love the most that she wears, the bright, sparkly green number.
Right. In when we
nope,
watched.
That's no green. That was me channeling Barbarella.
It was a bright, sparkly pink number.
Yeah.
What was hilarious is while we're watching this and she's like, I'm going to slip into something more comfortable. And then she comes out in this get up and you're like, what?
It's true. I would have started out with that.
When Bart knocks on her door and she responds with, welcome men, be in view, welcome. And that's a nod to the song Welcome Men from the 1966 musical Cabaret.
So, like, she turns off all of the lights. She gets a knock at the door. She has to go through in the dark to the door. And it's Lamar. And she's like, get out of here.
He's like, let me touch you. Like, he goes for her boob, yeah, and she just shuts the door in his face. Because also, yeah, you, Lamar.
She's working. Let her work.
And then she gets to work because she walks over and she goes, is it to woo what they say about men of your your kind, I think she says.
She says, "Your is it true what they say about your people?
And then you hear a zipper and then you hear, it's to woo, it's to woo, it's to woo, it's to woo.
Right.
And I was like, I mean, like, I'm happy to be pleasantly surprised, right?
Right.
But the way it happens.
This is the only edited or removed part of the movie. Would you like to know what it is? She says, it's twoo, it's twoo. And then Bart quietly states, you're sucking on my arm.
That would have been
so funny.
Yes.
That would have been, because she's like, I can't find you. So she has mm-hmm this whole bumbling around in the dark thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sean says that was later added back into the home video release. So I wonder if we just didn't hear it when we watched it.
No,
I turned on the subtitles.
Yeah.
I probably would have caught it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that would have been hilarious. And I remember cringing throughout the entire end of the scene. But I will say this. This plan backfires on Lamar because guess who seduces who?
So it cuts to the morning, right?
Yeah, she's feeding him like
schnitzel.
Or no, it's not strudel. But it's like these long
like
hot dogs.
Like this giant sausage.
Yeah.
She's like, have another bratwurst or whatever. And he's all like, oh no, 15's my limit.
Yeah.
For like a foot and a half of meat, mm-hmm, 15 times.
Yeah, and she doesn't. She doesn't want him to leave. And he's just like, I gotta go. Bye.
Okay, but the way... Okay, so she's like, I can't live without you. I never knew I needed you before. She's throwing herself at him. She's in a different pink number. Her lips are the best red I've seen on her ever. And I watched Clue intently, right? But like, she's hanging on him. He gets to the door. He turns around and he goes, Auf Wiedersehen, baby.
Mm-hmm. Woo! Yeah, it's like all of these people, all of these people who get put into a place where they're supposed to take Bart out, ultimately side with him.
Okay, which is illustrated in the next scene, Lydia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because he goes back to the sheriff's office and Mongo's chained up.
Yes,
and
he's unconscious. Mm-hmm. We've seen him chained up before. He's been like, he's hung like an angel. Between the cells, they've like chained him to the bars on cell one and cell two, because apparently the cell couldn't hold him. But he's like strung up, which is important for this scene.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the scene, when Bart's hanging up posters on the board, there's a wanted poster already hanging up on the wall. And this same poster can be seen on the wall in the jailhouse in the John Wayne movie Rio Bravo in 1959.
Nice. Jim says that they got a telegram.
Yeah, that they have to release Mondo by by Lamar's order or whatever.
Yeah, and here they were like, why is Lamar interested in a guy like Mongo?
But Bart reads the paper and he's like, it's legit. Mm-hmm. Kudos one for having a black man who can read in 1874.
Mm-hmm.
That was never questioned, that he's a fairly educated man. I think I like that, and I don't want to pass that by.
Mm-hmm.
But also, okay, so they go and grab water and they throw it on Mondo. Immediately breaks all of the chains on him because they weren't really holding anything.
He was just asleep and then they woke him up,
and he's like, you're free to go. And Mondo goes, I mean, do you love this scene as much as I do?
Well, he doesn't want to go because he likes Bart.
Yeah, he goes, I've never been beaten by anybody before. And I just really, really like you. And then Jim leans in and he goes, oh, I think he has a special affection for you. He really, really likes you. Mm-hmm. And Mondo goes, Mondo's straight. It's so cute.
It is.
And it's so straightforward and it's not dismissive. And he kind of is disappointed that, yeah. I mean, Lord help me. I've met some people and I was like, I just was a little bit more queer for you. I really do. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm just going to channel all of that affection into our platonic relationship.
Yeah. And so they start asking him, like, why does Lamar want to deal with you? Like, what's his big plan for Rockridge? And he's just like, this is when we get another fourth wall break. Or Mongo goes, I don't know. Nobody tells me. And he looks at the camera and he says, Mongo, only pawn in game of life.
Yes, he's so sweet. But then he does know what's going on. He's like, they're trying to figure out where the choo-choo goes.
Yeah, he's always talking about the choo-choo. And so that's when Bart's like, oh, we're going to have to go down to the railroad.
And then they do. And guess who we see?
He sees his old coworker,
Charlie. Co-workers.
Sorry.
So that was practically indentured servants.
That was my note, like meeting with coworkers from old job, but they're still on the shitty job. So
yeah, but then like all of the buddies come out. So like Charlie sees them coming in on horses and he's like, what? Right? Because last time he heard about Bart, he was gonna die.
Yeah,
so he's like getting a drink of water with a ladle and he like spills it on himself and he gets another ladle and he pours it on his face and he's like, Bart! And he like runs, and then all of the black people, I'm sorry, but like all the black people from the railroad churn around them, like it's like this, and Charlie's like, stay back, give him room.
Yeah,
and then everything has to transpire. What are you doing? What's going on?
Right. And after he kind of like gets the information that he needs, that's when Lamar's henchman comes in, and
that's when Lydia said in the middle of the movie,
middle management.
Yep. You're not wrong.
Yeah. And so they're
going to shoot him.
Yeah, they got like six guys up there and they all have guns pointed at him. And Jim's like, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
But there's exactly six of them with six guns pointed at Bart, Jim, Charlie and the crew. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you see in quick succession, all of those guns, and it's narrowed in on the guns. There's no people's faces. There's no animal.
Right. You get the tension building up a little bit they're cocking the guns and everything.
Yeah, it goes ting, 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 ting. And all of these guns fly out of these people's hands.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Gene Wilder. He has no gun. He's sitting calmly on a horse and he's just smiling.
Did you notice? Because I noticed this when I watched it earlier today, is that there was smoke coming from his holsters.
I did not. But yeah. That's brilliant.
Also, this is where I noted sobriety does wonders.
True. But then I think we go to, we're back to Lamar, right? Because he's yelling about how Lily isn't successful. And that's when he calls her a Teutonic something.
T-B-A-T.
No.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I thought it was T-E-U-T-O-N.
No, no, that no. He says Teutonic, but there's a word after that.
Oh.
And it's T-E-U-A-T.
A female derogatory term.
And she's like, I think they have her like chained up to a wall. And she's just like, you're not mad enough as he is. And he's better than you. And that's when Lamar seeing it fall through. And so he gets his henchmen.
She's like, you'll need an army to defeat him.
Mm-hmm. So he's like, I will get an army.
I'm sorry. You'd need an army to defeat him. Or whatever.
Yeah. And so he's telling his henchmen, take this down. And he starts listing off all of these, ruffians from other movies.
Henchmen's grasping at his pockets. And he's like, give me the bandits and the ruffians and the briggards. And then he says a whole bunch of slurred things that I don't want to repeat. And other gross, naughty, nasty things. He's like, buggers and whatever. And then he gets to the end. And he, I forget what the end of it is. But then henchman has his thing. And he's like, I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah.
But now we're going back to the town.
Right. And the entire town is ready to pack up because they see a help wanted sign for Lamar asking for all of these bad things. And he says, equal opportunity employer.
Bart pleads with the town. He goes, just give me 24 hours. And they don't want to.
No.
And then he's all like, would you give Randolph Scott 24 hours?
Would you do it for Randolph Scott? And they're like, Randolph Scott. And I'm like, who's Randolph Scott? Did any of us look it up? I actually...
did you already Google it?
I did. I think he's just like a famous Western director.
Tell me who Randolph Scott is.
This comes from Wikipedia. So Randolph Scott was an American film actor whose career spanned the years from 1928 to 1962. As a leading man for all but 3 years of his cinematic career, Scott appeared in a variety of genres, including social dramas, crime dramas, comedies, musicals, albeit in non-singing and non-dancing roles, adventure tales, war films, and a few horror and fantasy films. However, his most enduring image is that of a tall in the saddle Western hero. Out of more than 100 film appearances, over 60 were in Westerns. So even though he did like the span across genres, the majority of it, he was just a Western.
You know, he sounds exactly like the kind of guy that I would think that Mel Brooks would think of as a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like his own personal hero, you know?
Right. Like he would put that in there if he was like, this guy like probably maybe was a nice guy. I'm not reading past the first paragraph of the Wikipedia, so.
I think that's fine. Oh, now we cut to the
line of baddies.
Yeah, I call them all the riffraff.
We are now 2/3 of the way through our review of 1974's Mel Brooks comedy, Blazing Saddles, A Plotter. We're almost finished with the plot, but we've also got our shocked and applaudable moments that we can't wait to share with you. Looking for more great podcasts on cinema, old and new? How about some shows we've guest appeared on? Cinema Recall is dedicated to discussing iconic scenes in classic movies, hosted by our friend, The Vern. And Reels of Justice puts movies on trial with hosts and guests switching off between judge, prosecution, and defense. Check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer, Jen, but most people call me Jen. Are you looking for a plain and simple way to make sure Shocked and Applaud is supported in our efforts to reach new applauders in 2022? Then you might be interested in becoming a $1 per month official Patreon applauder. Visit shockedandapplaud.com and click on the Become an Applauder link at the top to get started. We'll be back in 1 week for our conclusion of our review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.